Jean-Charles Zhang versus Alberto Gonzalez. Ms. Yu.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Shan Shanzhou, attorney representing Junxiao Zhang, the petitioner in the case. Zhang is the citizen of China. This matter was before this Court on petition for review of the decision of BIA, which affirmed without opinion the decision of immigration judge in Chicago who denied the petitioner's application for asylum and order him excluded and deported to China. I will start with a brief history of the case. Zhang was born in 1976 and he was detained at the New York JFK Airport in January 1995, and he was placed in exclusion proceeding and was referred to immigration court. Shortly after that, he applied for political asylum.
Can you pull that mic down so we can hear? But just pull the mic down just
okay.
A little closer.
Thank you, Your Honor. Shortly after that, he applied for application for political asylum based on his wife's forcible abortion and his opposition to China's coercive family planning policy.
Ms. Zhao, was Zhang provided any notice that corroborating evidence would be required this time to establish the facts of the marriage and the forced abortion that were established by his testimony alone in the earlier proceeding?
Your Honor, as to corroborating evidence to provide corroborating evidence, supporting evidence, which...
No. My question is, was he provided any notice that he would have to, that this time corroborating evidence would be required? Because, of course, the first time he was able to establish both the facts of the marriage and the forced abortion by himself.
Yes, Your Honor. This time, petitioner has never been given any notice that he needs to provide any corroborating evidence to the court.
Was he going on the assumption that those prior findings in 1995 were established and he wouldn't have to need to prove those again?
Because the IJ in the 1995 hearing already found that his testimony credible, and also he found that Ms. Zhang had, his wife had suffered forcible abortion, and they did have a ceremony at home unofficially because they were underage and was not able to legally register for marriage.
So he assumed that finding in 95 would be applicable in the newer case, in the later case.
Yes, Your Honor, because the BIA remanded the case with the indicate that the denial of his application was based on the matter of Chen, which was no longer the good law, and the remanded case for further consideration and the new law and for inch of a new decision.
Now, that law was passed in 1996, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Suppose he had filed immediately, this is hypothetical, obviously, the fact of his marriage would still be intact, I assume, because it seems in the record we have here, limited as it is, that she remarried or married someone else, whatever, in 1997.
Your Honor, yes, you're right.
If he had filed in 96, I'll just finish that, then that fact of the abortion, the forced abortion, his vicarious being the assumed spouse would then have been intact. And I'm wondering, given the new situation where at least the court mentioned the fact that she was married to someone else, would that fact mean anything? Could he still go all the way back to that original finding, even though he's no longer married and certainly wouldn't have no fear of future persecution since he's married to that woman?
Your Honor, the fact is clear that his former wife married another man in 1996. But when in 1996, we don't know because nobody knows. And the fact that his former wife married another man, I don't think it has any difference to influence this case, because Ms. Zhang did suffer his former wife did suffer forcible abortion, and he still has a well-founded fear of persecution, which I have already detailed in my brief.
What is that? What's his fear of future persecution?
As a detainee, he will be prosecuted. I cited some cases.
For things like getting false documents and leaving the country and things.
Not only that, he was opposed to China's family planning policy, and he still is.
Well, a lot of people are. The question is, though, is he going to be subjected to that, or is it strictly a political opinion that he holds and you might say they know he knows? Is that what it comes down to?
I don't think so, because his wife suffered forcible abortion and
right.
His child was dead.
That's unequivocal. I understand his relationship with her and her. I would go further and say torture, but that's in any event, that's a given. But I guess the question is, can he still rely on that former association? Connection, vicarious connection, I guess I'd call it.
This issue has never been decided by the immigration judge,
right.
And he never talked about, never considered that.
Right.
I would say that it would.
See, he found something else. He said they never
yes.
were married, and there's no proof of this abortion.
Yes, that's what the IJ said.
Yeah, well, that's true. He didn't consider what I'm asking about, which is a problem, I admit. But I'm. Go ahead.
So I will start with the. Let me see where the first thing. Okay, so this case was remanded for a new consideration, and the IJ in Chicago, who denied his application for political asylum on the totally different three different grounds, which is completely totally different from the first IJ, and the first ground. For IJ's denial is that Zhang has not established by credible evidence that his wife suffered a forcible abortion, and he did not believe that Zhang has provided credible evidence in light of a country condition. As a matter of fact, and also he found that the consequence of a child in Fujian who is born out of wedlock and the parents are later legally able to get married are not subject to forcible abortion. This is erroneous as a matter of fact. As a matter of fact, Zhang did present credible corroborating evidence to support his claim, such as the news report and other documentations. And the immigration judge had made an error as to the finding of the fact, because his document he used is outdated, as I detailed in my brief. And the second ground the IJ denied his application is clearly erroneous as a matter of law, which I already detailed in my brief, see Ma versus Ashcroft. The third ground for denial is IJ abuses the discretion in denying his political application because it is in violation of petitioner due process right, because the charge has been already dropped and it's never putting back in place, and Chang has deprived his opportunity to defend the charge, and simply the judge abuses the discretion of doing that. I will reserve some time for rebuttal.
Your Honor. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Friedman?
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Richard Friedman with the Appellate Section of the Criminal Division, representing respondent in this case. This is not a criminal matter. We are assisting the Civil Division in the bulk of these cases. We believe that the most straightforward way to resolve this case is to focus on the IJA's exercise of discretion in denying asylum on the assumption that the petitioner had established that he was married in a traditional ceremony and that his wife was forced to undergo an abortion. So that we're assuming, for argument's sake, he qualifies as a refugee.
So you're following the findings of the first IJ then?
Just for purposes of this
argument.
Okay,
well, just so I understand what you're
doing.
Yes,
just for purposes. I'm following what the second IJ actually said on pages 10 and 11 of his decision. On the assumption that the petitioner has established refugee status, applying the totality of circumstances, which was a reference to the Pula decision.
So should we disregard everything in the brief?
By no means. I'm trying to condense in a 10-minute argument the most streamlined way that we think the court can resolve this case by focusing first on the validity of the exercise of discretion, even on the assumption that the petitioner has established refugee status. So the IJA relied on the totality of circumstances, which were, as referred to in his opinion, the fact that he found that there had in fact been a presentation of a fraudulent passport, that in the affidavit submitted, prepared when he entered the United States, he admitted that he had no problem with the government of China. And by the way, the IJ does refer to the petitioner having an ex-wife in the opinion on page 5, so he is cognizant that he's no longer married. He does refer to the fact that he found the petitioner to be incredible in his testimony, based in part on what he said in his affidavit, based in part on what he said at the 2003 hearing, and also the lack of getting corroboration from his mother, who was present and supportive, apparently, of the wedding, that he had been married. So all of these factors, plus the factor that the petitioner continued to lie about the fact that he had affirmatively presented his false passport. So under the totality of circumstances, it wasn't an abuse of discretion to deny asylum based on the totality of circumstances.
Well, the totality then is I'm not quite sure exactly what we're labeling as circumstances, but on one hand you say, well, for the sake of argument, you accept the fact that they had this marriage and they had this abortion.
Yes,
and
for the sake of argument.
But then you later say, but he's not credible because he didn't have his mother or somebody testify that they got married, and what is it?
Well,
I understand about the false documentation. That seems to be unrefuted.
Okay. Well, let's start with the false documentation, plus the fact that he continues to refute that charge. So it's not somebody who presents false documentation and then admits that he did it, claiming I had to get into the country to claim asylum. Moreover, he's not a person who did that to claim asylum, because when asked upon entry, do you have any problems with the government of China, he said no. His application for asylum comes in later. Moreover, let's consider the nature of both his apprehension and his actual risk that he will suffer persecution if returned to China. He testified that he has no actual fear that he's going to be punished for opposition to the policy. Secondly, since he's no longer married to this woman, any
I'm having a terrible time, Mr. Friedman, and let me try and explain why. The IJ stated that even if eligibility for asylum were found, he would exercise his discretion to.
That's what I'm addressing.
And because that exercise of discretion is based in part on the IJ's improper examination of Zhang's use of that passport, I have a problem. It seemed to me that in the brief, the government appeared to concede. That the IJ exceeded his authority numerous times, including in his consideration of the passport issue.
No, not in consideration of the passport.
And his conclusion that Zhang was subject to inadmissibility under 212A6.
We asked the court to carefully read page 11. Now, the court does not find him actually inadmissible under that provision. The court is distinguishing between a case involving the presentation of a passport that's fraudulent and the mere possession. And what the court said is, no, this isn't just a mere possession case. I find he actually presented it and therefore is subject to inadmissibility. Two or three lines later, he says, but I find he is inadmissible, not on that ground, but on the grounds charged.
Well, why is that entire discussion of the passport issue under the credibility heading in the opinion? Because that makes it pretty clear, I think, that the credibility findings by the IJ were based in large part on his improper inquiry into the Section 212A6 issue.
We respectfully disagree. We think it's a completely proper inquiry. It is one of the factors recognized in PULA as to whether asylum should be granted, as to how the person entered the country. Did they enter on false papers? Did they present those false papers? Did they immediately claim asylum? These are very relevant inquiries.
But, of course, the IJ bases his credibility determination in large part on the failure of Zhang to provide corroboration for his claims. And another IJ had already found him credible as to those facts. And, of course, Mr. Zhang would have had no reason to believe that additional corroboration would be required.
The petitioner elected to present new evidence at the new hearing. He gave testimony. There was no discussion as to whether they were going to rest on the available record. The remand was an open one, and the IJ had discretion whether to take the record as he found it and make new conclusions of law and exercise of discretion, or to open the record for further proceedings. There was no objection to that, and the petitioner put on his own testimony. Can it possibly be true that he can testify and then claim, but you can't make any credibility judgment of my testimony?
Yeah, but his testimony was consistent with what the findings were in the initial proceeding. Right.
Not with respect.
I mean, in terms of, and supported the findings of the IJ in the initial proceedings in terms of his testimony.
With respect to the marriage and the abortion. But with respect to the false passport, he once again reiterated that he didn't do it. And then on cross-examination, if I can put it that way, questioning by the judge, he admitted that, yes, indeed, I did present the passport. Now, the reason why credibility on the passport issue is relevant is he keeps denying that he entered the country using a fraudulent passport. That is, in a sense, keeps denying he committed what would amount to a felony if he were criminally prosecuted. And the IJ had to make a determination as one of the totality of circumstances is, how did this person enter the country? Is he being honest about how he entered the country? What is his real risk of persecution if returned? These are all factors that are relevant and material to the exercise of discretion, and all indicated in that PULA decision as part of the totality of circumstances.
But, Mr. Friedman, should we really not take special note of the fact that you are in the appellate division of the criminal division?
You should not take special note of that because we are simply assisting our colleagues in the civil division with their workload. There is no prospect that I'm aware of any criminal prosecution whatsoever of this petitioner based on the fraudulent passport.
Thank you.
If the court has no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thank you. Michelle.
Your Honor, I will just start with the IJ's credibility finding. Actually, based most of he based on his credibility finding, largely on the fraudulent passport, other than the others, which is not go to the heart of his asylum claim. And the judge did rule on Zhang's inadmissible on the ground that on the ground of section 212A6, which is specifically withdrawn by the government and agreed by court in 1995. That Zhang has deprived his opportunity to defend on his discharge, and he was never given written notice of discharge against him as required by the federal regulation. And this is particularly harsh to him because his father has filed the I-130 immigration petition on his behalf, and it was approved by the INS in 1995, and the priority date has already reached, and he is now eligible to apply for adjustment status. If this ground stands, he will be barred from admission from the United States for the rest of his life. This is particularly harsh for him.
So it isn't the 10 years, it's for the rest of his
yes,
life?
Yes, if it is inadmissible.
Ground.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, this case will be taken under advisement. That completes the arguments for the day, and the court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.